I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am, but Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Welcome to the Curiously Specific Book Club, the podcast that's curiously specific about dates and locations in well-known books. Presented by me, Lloyd Shepherd, and you, Tim Wright.
I'm Tim Wright.
You are.
Oh, my goodness. Okay, well, this is part two of our exploration of James Herbert's The Rats. In part one, we entered the eerie world of London's East End.
London's East End, and we covered a lot of kind of political ground.
Well, it's interesting, isn't it, that for a book that is really a shock horror book and quite trashy, can I say that?
Yeah, yeah. In the best way.
In a good way. Yeah. But, quite punky.
Yeah,
And doesn't in its own terms doesn't get very political and doesn't seem to recognise the world of the early 1970s in which it's set very much, and yet as soon as you go walking around there and talk about this part of London, you can't get away from it.
You can't get away from it.
The politics, the racism, housing,
Post-war shebang.
Yeah,
yeah,
it's amazing.
Well, on our walk, we were generally making our way from west to east. We were walking in an easterly direction with the ultimate aim of ending up at the Regent's Canal.
Yes, we had a slight debate, didn't we, at one point about whether the canal that they're talking about is the Limehouse Cut or the Regent's Canal. But in fact, it's
what
becomes apparent.
Well, he names a street. He names Tomlin's Terrace, which we're going to next.
Which we're going to go to.
We're going to go to next.
So Regent's Canal.
Regent's Canal. It runs
what do we know
from
about that?
It runs from basically Paddington,
where
it joins up with the Grand Junction Canal, Union Canal, beg your pardon. Opened in 1801, initially ran from there to Camden, and then the second part from Camden out to the river, they started building that in 1820. Basically, by the time of the book, this book, which we think is probably set early 1970s, we couldn't really get more specific than that.
72, 73. It's got to be post 71, and it's published in 74.
Yeah.
So it's in that zone.
The canal's basically shut down by that point.
Yes, it is.
It closed to commercial traffic completely in 1969.
Yep.
But it already, I'm getting this from the Canal Museum website, which is
it's good, isn't it?
Stuff. It had already pretty much closed to all commercial traffic.
Yes.
And in the book, it's very much a derelict place that you don't go to, surrounded by brick walls and fences. And
well, this tells you everything you need to know about the differences. That basically, the top end of Regent's Canal, you know, they had a Regent's Canal group and the Friends of Regent's Park. I think it's in 1982. That the remainder of the towpath, I'm getting this from the Friends of Regent's Park, that 1982, the remainder of the towpath down to Limehouse was open to the public. So it was, so it's basically shut for a good couple of decades. But obviously the top bit was all poshed up quite quickly because a property company in 72, 73 bought the yard at Hampstead Road, Locks, and converted to what we now know as Camden Lock.
Right.
Which is very, vibey place.
Very vibey.
You know, well, all the young people hang out.
Restaurants and expensive antiques these days.
You can get tattoos there as well.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. No, so the five Camden markets are now among the top tourist destinations in London.
Yeah.
So by 73, it wasn't a scary place.
North of that end. Yeah.
But of course, the rats go up through the canal to the zoo, don't they?
They go up to the zoo.
And the cinema,
which we think must be the Camden Park.
They're coming to get the Camden Islington people.
They're coming for you.
What made you draw a rat, Barney? He asked.
"Dunno, sir," Barney said, sucking the end of his pen. "I saw one the other day, big one like Keo saw." His voice trailed off. "Whereabouts?" asked the teacher. "By the canal, Tomlin's Terrace." "Did you see where it went? It jumped over a wall and disappeared into the bushes." "What bushes? There isn't a park down there." "Where the lock keeper used to live. It's like a jungle now. The canal's been shut down." You're excited now, aren't you?
Well, we're under a railway bridge on the canal at the end of Tomlin's Terrace. And you might be able to hear pigeons cooing in the...
Might be able to hear.
It's very loud. And the interesting thing, the reason I love it is that a bend in the canal coming down from Ben Johnson Way, heading down towards Limehouse. And where we're standing is quite overgrown. You know, everywhere else has been slightly kind of cleaned up and new housing and all this kind of stuff. But where we're standing, it's still quite crappy. And it's quite creepy and vibey. And if you look down the canal from here towards Limehouse Basin, so as it towards the River Thames, you will see an old lock keeper's cottage.
Yeah.
Which is where we're headed next. You wanted to stop here and record, but I think this is actually displacement activity because you're being a little bit creeped out by that, aren't you?
To go there.
He doesn't want to go down there.
I honestly didn't think it would be a real place. And I was wishing it wasn't.
It's
a real
really
place.
Good, though.
I'm not very keen on rats.
It's really
and
good.
And having read this book, I'm really not keen on rats.
The other thing you can see from here, and we'll talk about this at more length later on, is a massive block of flats built in the 60s, right on the canal's edge.
Yeah, so in the book, there's an attack on the flats as well, isn't there?
So where we're standing, we can see Tomlin's Terrace, the lockkeeper's cottage, a bridge, which we're underneath, and a block of flats.
It's bang on, isn't it?
I reckon James Herbert stood right here at least once.
Do you reckon he saw a rat swimming?
And I reckon he saw a rat swimming up there.
If we see a rat out here, yeah. One more.
Okay, understood.
I got a mule, her name is Sal. 15 miles on the Erie Canal. She's a good old worker and a good old pal. 15 miles on the Erie Canal. We hauled some barges in our day, filled with lumber, coal and hay. We know every inch of the way we
go. So we come to the moment where we have to decide whether James Herbert is at all curious about dates and locations. In the way that we are.
Well, specifically dates. We like to talk about the dating of the book. So when is the book actually
taking
set?
Place?
When is it taking place?
Yeah.
What time scale is taking place in? There's a couple of direct clues in the text, I would say.
Yeah.
He talks about the Tories. So remember, the book came out in 74. He started writing it in 71, 72.
Right.
He talks about the Tories being in power.
Right.
Tories were in power from 1970 to 1974.
Okay.
I think that's the main one, though, isn't it? I mean, that was the main year.
And then also he talks about them stopping free milk at schools, which is in 71.
That's in 71.
So it has to be post-71.
But the other date that kept coming up in my research was 1968.
Yeah, why is that?
So Foskins is described as being from the Ministry of Health.
Yeah.
Ministry of Health was dissolved in 1968 to form the Department of Health and Social Security. He talks about the Ronan Point collapse. That was also 1968.
Yeah, it's interesting, isn't it? Because there's also the Sexual Offences Act of 1967, which legalises homosexuality. And the first chapter of this book
is about a gay man.
About a gay man.
Yeah.
Are we thinking that homosexuality was legal or illegal in that chapter?
Oh, it's legal. I think there's no sense in which it's illegal.
No,
it's
exactly.
Just extremely.
So it has to be post-67.
Yeah.
For that, but it ties in your 68 thing, which I think it, in his imagination it does feel like the Regent's Canal was closed in 69.
Yeah.
Yeah, the other little clues I've got is that his girlfriend drives a battered Hillman Minx. They stopped making those in 1967.
So presumably because it's battered, it's quite old.
It's quite old, yeah, but it's probably an early 60s, but she's driving around with it. It's got to be between sort of 67 and 74, hasn't it, for her to be driving that old thing.
Yeah, absolutely.
Now, they drive to... First, they drive to Walton to see his aunt.
Yeah.
And then they
her aunt.
Her aunt, sorry, yes. And then they take a trip to Stratford-upon-Avon.
They do.
For a bit of culture. So that, obviously that whole trip interested me.
He's fantastically rude about the tourists. So it's very funny.
Well, he's rude about foreigners, mate, foreigners. Is what he's rude about. Yeah. He's rude about
by
foreigners.
By him, I mean James Herbert.
Yeah. And also, yeah, exactly. He's, yeah. No, but no, it's mainly the teachers. I came here to get away from it all, and now I've got all these stupid foreigners here who don't even understand Shakespeare. Well, two things I noticed about the description of that. One is that he goes to the theatre and it's shut.
Yes.
So that's quite unusual for the RSC to be shut, especially when at the height of tourism.
Yeah.
And the second thing is that there's a moment where it rains. And then they drive in the car, and then they go stop and go, oh, see that hill up there? That'd be a great place to have a shag.
Yes.
And
you're paraphrasing, of course.
So that's what they do. But it's been raining.
Yeah.
No mention. Muddy. Their clothes are pristine and dry at the end of it. They put them back on and get back in the car, no problem.
Yeah.
No.
Is this helping with the dating, or are you just remarking on it?
Well, I'm remarking on that, saying it must have been a very localised shower. Could I be looking at weather charts for the time?
Wow, okay.
To say what was the weather
localized
like?
Localised showers in Stratford. Wow.
Yeah, I wasn't wildly successful, but I was quite interested to find that, obviously, the time that the Royal Shakespeare Theatre is shut, there's a short period. It's usually open most of the time. They have a winter season and a summer season, obviously, and they tour. Obviously, they used to come to London a lot, and then they tour. So, and their website's very good at showing you all the records of when their productions took place. And they generally, the place goes dark around sort of February, March, where they end the winter season and they rehearse the summer season. And the summer season opens last week of March or first week of April.
Yeah.
So, that's kind of interesting, isn't it? And it's open for all the rest of the year round, really. So if he goes to there when it's shut, I think it's got to be March.
Right.
I think it's got to be mid-March, which then, given that there's a shower of rain, I think that's quite good.
Yeah.
Then at Walton, they go for a walk at 10:30. The aunt says, why don't you, after supper, she says, why don't you take a stroll? It's so mild out, you know, before you go to bed and have a bit of rummy bub.
Go on then.
So it's got to be quite warm.
Yeah.
Can't be winter.
No.
She's wearing a straw hat when she goes out to the fate, to the village fate.
I have to say, the whole thing gave me the impression that it was the
summer. Oh, no, jumble sale. Jumble sale, it's a jumble sale.
Summer or late spring, I was thinking.
Well, here's the other thing is, the kids are in school. He's a teacher.
The kids are in school.
So it can't be Easter.
It can't be Easter.
And it can't be the summer. It can't be summer. Yeah. So I was thinking it's either, but then the RSC is open in June, July, mainly for school trips, obviously.
Right.
It would be full of people. I'm wondering, I'm going towards March. I've got the days mapped out as usual for you, listener.
So how long,
how long does it go on for? I think you might want to know this. I hope you want to know this, because this is the whole point of this exercise.
Why are you listening
why are you listening to us? Yeah, exactly. Why would you bother? Yeah. So it's between 7 and 8 weeks that the whole thing, 8 weeks. So 2 months.
So you'd say starting in March. The problem with that, of course,
well,
is
then it'd be Easter.
That would take it over Easter, wouldn't
yeah,
it?
Yeah, but the kids, obviously, they close. I said the kids will be back. They do say at one they point, the kids will be back at school.
Yeah, but they close soon. The
so they've closed the school
because of the crisis.
Yeah,
which is why all these teachers are hanging around trying to save London, because they haven't got a job to do.
Yeah. So, if it was March, April, tricky. Could it be June, July?
Could it be May?
Could it be May?
If it started in May.
My problem with that is that in 1972, Coriolanus opens on the 11th of April and is running from that date.
Right.
And in 73, Romeo and Juliet opens on the 28th of March and is running throughout that time, with Timothy Dalton as Romeo.
So we think
David Suchet as Tybalt.
So we're thinking sometime between 1968 and 1972, sometime between March and May.
That's about as good as it gets. That's all we can do.
Yeah,
I think it's a couple of months in one of those years.
It's a bit of a tough one, isn't it?
I am veering towards 73, merely because the canal is so abandoned that it needs to be as long as possible from when it was sort of shut down and boarded up.
Yeah.
I'm going to say my favourite is, I think, March, April, 73.
When he reached the street that ran alongside the old canal, it was deserted of any rodent life at all. He spotted a car halfway down the street and assumed Foskins had beaten him to it. He stopped at the place where he knew the house to be hidden, behind a high wall and screened by wild foliage. Foskins must have parked his car and walked back looking for the house. He sat there for a few minutes, listening for any sound, reluctant to leave the comparative safety of his vehicle. He reached for the glass-visored helmet and got out. He stood there and looked both ways, down and up the street. Carrying the helmet in one hand, ready to don it at the slightest cause, he moved towards the boarded-up gap in the wall where the iron gates had once stood. Two of the heavy boards had been pulled aside, leaving a hole large enough for a man to get through. So he's gone to the old lockkeeper's cottage.
It's rather nice now. It's been done up.
And you can hear the sound of the lock.
Well, we can...
Perfect. You can see, just as we're sitting here, a barge boat. A barge? Long boat? What do you call them?
Yeah.
Canal boat.
Yeah.
Is going into the lock.
With two little white terriers.
Which is rather exciting. Got a dog
very
on top.
Exciting.
So we're here. We found it.
Yeah. Do you know what?
Swan Lane Lock?
Salmon.
Salmon Lane Lock.
Salmon Lane Lock. It's a working lock.
Sitting on the Stepney side of the canal, and it's all new recent development housing behind us. So this would have been wasteland.
But the lockkeeper's house, I honestly didn't think it would... I didn't think it would be there. And yeah. B, I didn't want it to be there.
No, you were a bit scared about it. But when we got here, it's been cleaned up and turned into something rather nice little dwelling. It's been extended, actually. It's got two extensions on either side. As we came by, a man in his nightwear... It's quite a late morning here. Appeared to pick up his... Came out the front door to take his post. He had no rats with him, and he did not look like a explorer.
Well, in the description of the house, of course, it does talk about having a kind of basement, doesn't it?
It does talk about having a basement. That
is
could have
a basement there?
It could have a basement there.
I question the basement above the canal. I question the basement issue.
So it all fits together rather well, I think.
He hadn't lived here for a long time. He obviously knows this bit really well.
Well, I think we walked down from Ben Johnson Bridge, didn't we?
Yeah.
Is it Ben Johnson Lock?
It was Ben Johnson Bridge,
Ben Johnson Bridge. We walked down here to Salmon Lane Lock, and I think he definitely... Well, he probably didn't do that walk because you couldn't walk down there back in the day.
From the outside, yeah.
Maybe he stood at one end and...
He might have known it as a kid, though, as
But
well.
If he'd gone onto the bridge here, Salmon Lane Bridge...
Yeah.
He could have seen the lock house there. And actually, it would have looked really rubbish and crappy when he was doing that.
Yeah.
If you get over that bridge in 1971, 1972, when he's thinking about writing the book...
Yeah.
And look back up the canal, he would have seen the whole area the rats come from laid out in front of him. So at the end of the book... Harris goes to the lockkeeper's cottage to find Foskins. It's all very unlikely.
Yes.
But then there's another big set piece scene where he comes here with the man from Ratkill.
Ratkill. So we know what that is, don't we? That's obviously Rentokill.
Yeah, obviously based on Rentokill.
Basically, they go down a wall, the two of them. They walk back towards the starting point of the wall, and they're looking for a hole in the fence, and they get through the fence. And then he sees rats swimming across the water. And then the rats suddenly turn and disappear through a hole in the old wooden fence that protected that side of the canal from public property.
So that's the other side. So he's on the poplar side, and that's the Stepney side.
Yeah. And then Ferris, the rat catcher, says, "Thank God for that!" And then when he'd recovered, "What's over there?" Harris thought for a moment, trying to recollect the surrounding area. "Well, there's a bit of wasteland. We can see the undergrowth from here, and then there's..." He scratched his cheek and pondered. "Oh, no. Flats. There's blocks of flats behind the waste. I'm going around to the flats. You follow when you phone. There's a small road bridge across the canal not far in that direction." That's the Salmon Lane Bridge.
"Yep.
So follow me as fast as possible, for Christ's sake. I don't want to come up against that lot on my own."
So if you look at Salmon Lane Bridge from where we're sitting,
Tim...
And you walk across there from the other side, where do you end up?
Well, I looked it up. There is a fantastic...
There's literally a massive 70s tower block immediately opposite it.
There is. It's called Anglia House, Lloyd.
Anglia House.
Anglia House is a good sign, isn't it? Norfolk, Anglia House.
There's been at least one Norfolk reference in every podcast.
But, let me tell you, I've looked it up.
Yeah.
It was commissioned in 66.
Oh, so, okay, right.
Okay, it was actually opened in 1969. Anglia House was approved in 66 and contains 66 flats. And its address is 66 Salmon Lane.
So it's a double 666.
666.
Wow.
Shall we go and visit it?
Shall we?
It's an interesting note that it's only about a half a mile to the Limehouse Basin, to sort of Poplar. And then the other sign, it says it's 3.5 miles to Islington. So where do you think he came from?
Well, that's interesting, isn't it? Because the other thing in the book that's a bit puzzling is that the hero, Harris, lives at King's Cross. And of course, the Regent's Lane Canal goes through King's Cross.
The Regent's?
Regent's Lane Canal. What's the Regent's Lane Canal? The Regent's Canal. Where did I get Regent's Lane Canal from? Regent's Canal goes to King's Cross after it goes to Islington.
And where does it go after that?
Well, after that, it goes to Camden. And so the rat attacks that happen towards the end of the book, there's an attack on the zoo,
which is on the canal.
In Regent's Park. And then just before that, there's an attack on a cinema.
Yeah.
The only cinema I can think of that's anywhere near this canal, anywhere, not even here, is the Camden Parkway Odeon.
Good.
So the canal basically passes like right behind the Camden Parkway Odeon, doesn't it?
As we're now sitting here by the canal and talking about it, the canal becomes a really good spine for this story. That a walk, again, listener, a walk up the Regent's Canal takes you through quite a lot of this book.
Yeah, so you could start at Limehouse Basin, which is where the canal comes out onto the Thames.
And you could go all the way to the zoo.
And you can walk all the way to the zoo.
And imagine all those animals being attacked.
It was the problem of the bloody authorities. What disgusted him more, the vermin themselves or the fact that it could only happen in East London? Not Hampstead or Kensington, but Poplar. Was it the old prejudices against the middle and upper classes, the councils that took the working class from their slums and put them into tall, remote concrete towers, telling them they'd never been better off, but never realising that 40 homes in a block of flats became 40 separate cells for people, communication between them confined to conversations in the lift? Was it this that really angered him? That these same councils could allow the filth that could produce vermin such as the black rats? He remembered the anger he'd felt at the time a new ultra-modern flat had collapsed when by some miracle only 9 people had been killed. His resentment had been directed not only at the architects who had designed the block construction, but the council who had approved its design.
Mm.
James Herbert's little history of the East End there.
Yes. Well, what is the East End then?
What is the East End? Broadly speaking, it's east of the City of London. Right?
Yes. Okay.
So that's from sort of the Tower of London out past the Royal Docks. But
well, it's not from the Tower.
People argue about where it starts and where it ends.
They
don't
do. They? It's very uncertain.
Yeah.
I like the idea that it starts from the Aldgate pump.
The Aldgate pump?
The Aldgate pump. It's still there, you know.
Right.
And it's been there for hundreds of years. It's a pump serving fresh water to the community. Apparently, it has a bright, sparkling and cool and agreeable taste.
Still?
I don't know if anyone's... Well, I wouldn't eat it now because they say the reason why it tastes as it does is that it's basically the leaching of calcium from the bones of the dead in the adjoining graveyards that makes it taste so nice.
There's a lot of this stuff when you're talking about the East End.
Most people agree that it sort of ends at the Lee River.
Okay. Most people?
Most people who aren't from the East End... Who are people like me who sit in South London,
not a Limehouse
from Norwich,
not Limehouse
and claim
basin.
To know anything at all about the East End.
Okay, all right. Fair enough. And it encompasses the Isle of Dogs, of course, which is a big kind of bend in the river.
That's right.
Now,
which is now Canary Wharf.
Historically, it was where kind of the industry around London developed in the sort of the Middle Ages and going, you know, it was like... That, don't do that within the city walls, do it over there.
Yeah.
So they've started developing out that way. But obviously it was also, by the 19th century, the place where the docks had all been built.
Yes.
So the London Dock, Wapping, opened sort of 1805. The East India and West India docks on the Isle of Docks around the same time. So all that area, sort of below the East End and along the
Amazing
river.
Amazing how you've just gone into your automatic, let me tell you about the context of my novel talk,
yeah,
haven't you?
I know, it's good, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
You look quite bored.
Well, it's just like
you're sort of autopilot.
I know this stuff.
You,
I know this stuff. Docks. But the time we're talking about, he says at one point in the book, you know, dockers are well paid and all this kind of stuff.
Yeah.
But at the time, actually, the docks are all closing or beginning to close. The London dock closed in 1969.
Okay.
East India dock closed in 1967. The West India dock stayed open a little bit longer. It stayed open until 1981, but it was just grinding down and down.
Okay,
and
then the Surrey dock south of the river.
And the Royal docks, kind of, which are now London City Airport, they closed in 1981 as well.
Gosh.
And the Surrey docks, as you say, on the other side of the river.
1970?
In the 70s, yeah. We're all closing. So it's all closing.
Wow.
The other thing that's happening at the time, obviously, is massive housing development, but chaotically planned and chaotically organised.
Yeah.
I found a good thing from the Survey of London, which basically said, because you had the GLC, the Greater London Council, you did have Poplar Borough Council and Stepney Borough Council. They were reorganised into Tower Hamlets in 1965.
Okay.
So the whole place was like, it wasn't clear who owned what bit of land and, you know, all this kind of stuff. And nobody had any money, right? The government didn't have any money. The council didn't have any money. So they were chucking up these, as he calls them, block-designed flats.
Right.
And I think what he's talking about there, when he talks about the ultra-modern flat collapsing, is Ronan's Point.
Okay. I didn't know about this.
Which I got some good stuff from the Open University, in fact. Let me just pull that up.
If you go on YouTube and search for sort of London East End development 1970s,
there's some great
footage of sort of news programme, feature programmes,
yeah.
People standing on vast wastelands,
yeah.
Blokes who look like they're in sort of sheepskin jackets with big sort of mutton chops and brill creamed hair. Talking about how they're going to, you know, take this wasteland and turn it into a thriving commercial district.
Yeah. Mm. Well, 16th of May 1968,
yeah.
Mrs. Ivy Hodge, a council tenant in a block of flats called Ronan Point in East London, wandered into the kitchen of her 18th floor flat. Bless her. She leaned over her cooker and struck a match. Instantly, an explosion blew out the precast concrete panels which formed the side of the building. The entire end of the block collapsed like a house of cards. Mrs. Hodge survived, but four others died. It was modern architecture's Titanic.
Wow.
And spelled the end of the high-rise as a viable solution to the post-war housing crisis, as well as plunging modern architecture and the architectural profession to a low level of public esteem.
That's interesting, isn't it?
Yeah. So in 1 year previous to the disaster, 1967, 470,000 new flats and houses were built, most of them in block-built tower blocks.
Which is so interesting when you say that the population is falling and they're building all these new houses for people who aren't
slums.
There.
They're clearing a lot of slums at the same time, aren't they?
Yeah. I read also that quite a lot of the young Bangladeshi men who came over to live in that area, basically, they were quite reasonably skilled at textiles manufacturer, and that was the big thing that the Jewish community had brought to that area. Yeah. So it's a big. Do you know there's still mulberry trees in Stepney for silkworms?
Really?
Yeah. They actually had their own silkworms in Stepney. It's weird,
wow,
isn't it?
That is weird.
Anyway, so they came over as textile workers, but really low paid. They couldn't get anywhere to live because no one would rent them anywhere because, frankly, the landlords were all racist. And so they had to self-organise. They saw what young white people were doing in places like Charing Cross when we talked about what was going on around Cambridge Circus and Tinker Tailor Soldier
Squatting.
Spot. Have a listen to that. Lloyd did some really interesting research on the whole of that era. So they saw what all the sort of young white guy people were doing in London about getting organised about squatting. But Bangladeshi kids, men started to do the same thing
right.
in the area.
Yeah.
Start to organise serious squats, which then wound up the races even more, obviously.
Yeah. But yeah, I mean, my feeling is that he hasn't got much of a feel for what's actually happening in the East End in 1974. But by that time, he'd presumably moved out. I don't know where he was living by then. He might even have moved out of London by that point. He'd pretty successful in advertising.
I was going to say, if you're successful in advertising, he's not hanging around.
Well,
there,
I know by the 80s he was living in Sussex, you know. So
The thing is, obviously from a small age, he was up and out. He went to Highgate Classic School.
Yeah.
Then he went to Hornsey Art School. Then he got a job in ads. So the last time he sort of hung around the East End was probably when he was 15.
I think that's right. There's like a gap in his knowledge.
Yeah, so him saying he's really good on locations.
Well, I think it's a case of write what you know, or rather in this case, write what you knew.
Possibly. Now, I just want to say this is also a contemporary problem about development across London, actually. I was sort of looking for stories about rat, as you do. And I came across this really interesting, I hadn't realised this phenomenon that's been going on, which is that all the people who live on the route of HS2, the high-speed link, out of...
Euston. Yeah.
Just above there, in Regent's Park Estate, they're having a major... They've been having a major problem for the last couple of years, that they that rats are fleeing drains and sewers because of HS2 railway digging and surging up through holes in the ground, causing havoc across the Regent's Park Estate.
Blimey.
She's Patsy Downey, who has lived in Vandal Street since 1971.
Right.
She's never seen the like. It has got totally out of control. It is a direct result of the latest excavation of HS2. At the moment, I'm sitting looking out of the window and I can see the rats. There are five families of rats out there playing with their children in the grass. She says, we've always had rats around here, but now it's 1,000 times worse.
Wow.
So what I'm saying to you is that... and what's really brilliant about this is that then obviously the HS2 development people say, oh, well, we came down there and we saw no evidence of rats whatsoever. So, of course, the developers are just sort of gaslighting the locals about the rat incident. It's just not happening. But if you're smashing up the place for development, if you're putting up flats and putting in roads and you're doing all that stuff, you're displacing the rats. That's what you're doing.
You are.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
This is Paige, the co-host of Giggly Squad, and I want to tell you about a company that I've been loving, Olive & June. Olive & June gives you everything that you need for a salon-quality manicure in one box. And if you break it down, it really comes out to $2 a manicure, which is absolutely insane. It's also so easy to get salon-worthy nails at home with Olive & June. The difference between how your nails used to look when you did them yourself and now with the Manny system is a complete game changer. The best thing about Olive & June, too, is it's a quick dry. It dries in about 1 minute, lasts for 5 days, and full coverage in up to 1 to 2 coats. Visit oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
There's a lot to be said for giving people a decent place to live in. I don't know who designs them. I don't know who they design them for, or if they think that we feel or think any differently than they do. There must be reasons why these architects build these flats in this design and this hard barrack-looking way, because I'm sure they couldn't possibly like the structure and the outlook of them themselves. I don't think there was an awful lot of thought put into it. If they would have only consulted ordinary people who have to live in these places, what we would like, it's not a lot we would like. But we do like the same things they enjoy. They like the outside of their places to look nice, and so do we. We don't differ in any way to them. Surely that in time somebody will learn to come and ask the ordinary people what they'd like and how they would like them.
He crossed the canal bridge and saw the council flats before him. He heard the commotion seconds before he came upon the ghastly scene. As he ran into the grounds and turned a corner, he saw an old lady furiously waving a broom in the air, being dragged to the ground by several large rats. And then I'm afraid the Rentokil man gets it, doesn't he?
Ferris.
The old lady was on the ground, her chest heaving in sharp, uneven movements, covered in blood, still feebly holding on to the broom. It was only then that Harris saw the shredded, blood-stained overalls of little Ferris. It was only the now barely recognisable uniform with its Rat Kill logo emblazoned on the chest that made him realise it was the little rat exterminator. For the crumpled body no longer had a face.
That's such a great James Herbert line. The crumpled body no longer had a face.
That gives you a flavour, dear listener.
Of the said book.
The gruelling stuff. Now look, we've found it, haven't we?
Well, we're standing on Salmon Lane Bridge, facing the wall because it's a bit windy, so it looks a bit weird from the road. And we think that Harris runs across the bridge from that side. Salmon Lane Bridge. And then as you come over the bridge, and he says seconds later he turned into the grounds. That's exactly what would happen if you went into Anglia House, because it's just off the bridge.
And the rats are coming to feed off the garbage coming down the chutes of the tower.
And there's two chutes on the side of the street.
On this side.
So it's all very, very good.
It completely works. Yeah. And also as a landscape, it's so evocative of what was going on here, because we've got these two towers, two flats, it's 1960s. Towers,
yep. Block built,
and then we've got an ancient old pub called the Prince Regent,
which is really lovely.
We've got a massive second-hand tyre store,
yeah,
and that's and then so in that time it would have been absolutely just these two modern tower blocks
looking out over
a
wasteland,
on a load of wasteland.
Yeah,
it would have been quite telling, wouldn't it?
Yeah, it would have been
of what kind of development is
and
going
railway,
on here.
The railway going past as well.
It's quite interesting because afterwards Harris says Harris was in no mood to go back to school that afternoon. He walked for a while through the streets of his childhood, coming upon long-forgotten alleys, a tobacconist where he bought his first packet of Domino cigarettes, Linda Crossley's house, a girl who had one night when they were teenagers, let he and six of his mates have it off with her at the back of their local youth club, and was forever known as Seven Up. Bomb sites still untouched by building developments, stunted posts once used to tie horses to in his days to play leapfrog, and today, well, not many horses around anymore. And when was the last time he'd seen kids playing leapfrog? Finally, he caught a bus and returned to the flat. And then he says, civilised London, swinging London, dirty bloody London.
Yeah.
Wow. Yeah.
That's quite punk again, isn't it?
It is quite.
Dirty bloody London.
Dirty.
You can imagine
London.
Johnny Rotten. Dirty bloody London.
You dirty old man. Is you that what he says to Bill Grundy?
Steve Jones
you
says it.
You dirty little rotter. He
Steve
called
Jones.
Him, actually. Right. You rotter. You dirty little rotter.
So I think it's good.
That's 76, isn't it?
That's 76.
Yeah.
A couple of years after this book
yeah,
comes out.
Yeah, Sex Pistols.
It's in the air, right? That kind of like.
So this is the anarchy in the UK of literature.
I would say. Yeah, the wind's died down a bit now.
Of course, the Stranglers had an album out, and so was it 76, Rattus Norvegicus?
Yes, The Brown Rat.
Yeah, there we go. So punks and rats.
Punks and rats, they're in the space.
It could be in the space. This is terrific here.
The tyres, new and used place opposite the flats is quite something. A very tattered Union Jack.
Straight off the canal.
Flapping in the breeze in front of a 60s tower block. I'm
this
feeling a metaphor coming on.
Is England.
I thought it might be quite nice to sort of describe the route we took, because you in particular were very taken by how interesting the actual walk was. We did
it
all
in
one day,
wasn't it?
We did a big loop.
Yeah, we did. Yeah.
So we started at Whitechapel Station.
Yeah.
Headed down the Whitechapel Road to Altibally Park.
Yes.
Then we cut down along Stepney Way to...
Down the back of the hospital.
Down the back of the old London Hospital.
Which is extraordinary. The old hospital is
It's the old outpatients entrance.
But sort of boarded up.
Yeah.
And then the new hospital's massive.
It's a huge building.
Absolutely.
You literally walk under the hospital, don't you?
You have to walk under it.
And then we ended up at Stepney Green Recreation Ground and to talk about the school.
School's there.
And then we walked through an amazing church that I've already forgotten the name of.
St Dunstan's.
St Dunstan's Church.
One of the oldest churches in London.
It's like you're suddenly in the countryside. It's amazing, surrounded by this amazing churchyard. And
it's pre-Norman.
And a really lovely 18th century housing all around it. It's beautiful,
amazing
place. And from there, we made our way down to,
the canal. Through an estate to the canal.
Tomlin's Terrace.
Tomlin's Terrace. And then it's still there. Tomlin's Terrace. I thought that wouldn't be there, but it is actually there. It's sort of like there's black iron railings that just on the side, and then there's a walkway, which is that terrace.
Yeah. And then we walked down the canal past the lockkeeper's cottage.
You're really not very far from Limehouse Basin
and
there.
Then we
ended
up
I was quite surprised by that.
Which is where the Regent's Canal comes out into the Thames.
And you walk under the A13.
Yeah. So it's a brilliant walk. To get a picture of what the East End is like today.
Well, even better was I felt that we stopped for lunch. It was lovely.
We did.
In McKellen's
pub. Ian McKellen's.
The Grapes.
The Grapes in Limehouse.
And then, I would recommend this listener to get on the Docklands Light Railway. We went from West Ferry, didn't we?
We did.
And we went up to Bow.
To Bow, which is where Poplar Town
Hall
is.
But if you take that train and look out the window.
Because you go through the middle of the window, and it's now being completely turned into flats.
Well, they've got one of everything from every period. That's the it's so piecemeal.
And if you want to pick up, I'm just looking at Rightmove now. If you want to pick up a flat in Poplar that's near the river, you're talking about £2 to £3 million.
That's ridiculous, right?
For a flat.
And yet they still have the Crisp Street Market and a very small and I presume sort of shrinking area of where the original sort of working class families lived. There's still an estate there.
The other thing that's worth saying is I looked for flats for sale in Poplar, East London. 669 results. It's huge numbers of flats that have been built.
Yes.
In
so as a development sort of playground, a developer's playground, that's what it looks like.
Right.
Yeah. And then we got to Poplar Town Hall, but then you can just walk down the road and then jump on the district line, and then you can recreate the tube incident at Stepney Green, can't you?
Yeah, yeah. And then you can go back to...
And then you can walk down. We walked to Shadwell.
From Stepney Green Station down to Shadwell, London Overground.
Which I think was very interesting. We did that just as schools were coming out at 3:30. And it was very, very telling. There's a very, very large Bangladeshi community there. Obviously sort of second, third generation, if not fourth generation now. But it was very noticeable that most of the people who live there are of Asian descent, Bangladeshi.
You couldn't help but overhear them talking to each other.
Oh, brilliant.
And they were Londoners.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
They were complete Londoners.
Absolutely.
It was hilarious listening to them talk about. Yeah. She said, what?
Yeah.
Blimey.
And basically, as you walk that down to Shadwell from Stepney Green, so you would have done a nice little circle there.
It's amazing.
Take this book with you, but just use it as an excuse to look around Tower Hamlets.
So if you're visiting London...
It's a slightly
overseas,
different,
and they're saying to you, "Well, make sure you check out Madame Tussauds, and make sure you do,
do the Jack the Ripper tour.
Do the Jack the Ripper tour. Don't
forget
any of that stuff. Get it into Whitechapel.
Go do the rats
and do the rats." So, that was James Herbert's The Rats.
We have to give it a mark out of 10.
Well, because we are very austere.
Well, because we're like teachers, like Harris.
We give two ratings. One for artistic impression and one for curiously specific ability.
Yes.
The extent to which it's curiously specific about dates and locations.
Yes.
What order do you want to do them in?
Well, you normally start with artistic impression.
So, artistic impression.
I'm going to go straight in there and say that I was very worried about reading this book. I thought it's going to be too trashy.
It was my idea, wasn't it?
Yeah. I'm excited because I haven't read it since I was 10, you know. But it is very accessible. I like the idea that it's a book that anybody can kind of read. It's quite sort of down to earth, and it's about sex and violence. It's deliberately trashy.
Yeah.
It's not making any big claim for itself.
Yeah.
And therefore, I don't want to be too snobby about it, therefore, and give it too low a mark.
Yeah. I think I said give it two.
And as a result of that, I'll give it two. But and I like the style of writing. I think it's quite a direct. You know, it's got a verve to it. It's got punch. It uses a very sort of visceral vocabulary. So I'm going to give it. I enjoyed reading it actually. So I think I will go quite high. I'm going to go 8.
Very good. Okay.
Didn't struggle with it. Went through it. Read it 3 times. Enjoyed it.
I'm very similar actually. I mean, I think it's, you know, it's not. There is a. I think Stephen King's analogy with punk is actually really. You know, appetite, because yeah. I just think there is something that, you know, he's just like, it's a new way of writing. Yeah. You know,
it's of its time. It's full of misogyny and
the subject matter. You're is going to be uncomfortable. You wouldn't recommend it. You wouldn't give it to a young person to read.
No,
but as you say, I think it is incredibly good fun to read and incredibly punchy and, I mean, brutal, but also, you know, direct and all that. So I think I'd go 8 as well.
Oh, good.
I think that's all right. I think that's fair enough.
Now, in terms of specificity and the Q-spec rating, location-wise, we're quite happy with it, I think. It took us on an adventure, which is what that gives it marks, doesn't it? That you can get a route and it takes you somewhere. We're a bit worried that he hasn't really been to these places at the time he mentions. He may have been to them in the late 50s and early 60s, but by the early 70s, he works for an ad agency. He hasn't got time for that.
He thought he knew the place better than he did. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
He just, I was brought up there. I don't need to go back. I don't need to go back and check it out now because I
grew
up there.
He may be quite surprised by how rapidly it changed.
Yeah, exactly.
He would have been surprised. Yeah. So I think that's a problem for him. Dates... As we've said in our dates section, he's not interested in dates, really. He's just got a couple of weekends he's really interested in, a Friday to Monday series of incidents, and then some intervening weeks. Mm. But he's not interested in when that is. We think it's a spring and stuff. So I'm giving him a really low mark for dates because he's all over the place, I think. So I'm going to give him a 4.
Blimey. That's pretty... Yeah,
I'm going to give him a 4. Yeah, yeah.
Well,
we've done more impressive work than him.
Yeah, I would agree with all of that. I'd also add in that getting his rats wrong in a book called The Rats seems to me to be.
I love your face as you
very,
say that.
Very,
you're
very,
really,
serious.
Really not happy with
so
that.
So I'm going in. I think because of that, I'm going an even lower, Tim.
What?
I think I'm going for a 3.
Wow.
I kind of go, Herbert, Herbert, you've got that wrong.
That's incredible.
You've got that wrong.
Then he's got a very low score all round, hasn't he? So we're sort of saying you'd read it, but be mindful that his dates and locations are all over the place, and he's got his rats wrong.
He's called
the rats, and he's got his rats wrong.
I mean, there's no coming back from that. So it's the end of our rats adventure.
Finally, we're rat-free.
We like to say a few thank yous at this stage for bits and pieces that we've used on the way. Do you want to do your regular thank you for our theme?
My regular thank you.
Well, we have our theme tune.
Yes, our lovely Q-spec loop is supplied by an artist who goes by the name of Learning Music from the Free Music Archive. We are very grateful because I'm finding it quite soothing to when it comes in.
When it comes in, yeah.
Also, it fills some useful gaps in the podcast, doesn't it?
I've got some thank yous to say for music. You would have heard a piece of Bangladeshi music in the first episode.
Oh, that was great.
That was actually Bangladesh by Azam Khan.
Right.
Azam Khan is a very interesting figure, huge figure in Bangladeshi music. He fought in the Independence War
in the
early 70s. In the second episode, you would have heard a thing called Erie Canal. By a chap called Carl Gunnar Holmqvist. It's a traditional song. I was looking for canal folk songs.
Yeah, which as you do.
Harder to find than you'd think. I thought there'd be quite a lot. That was the best one I could find. If anyone knows of a really good English canal folk song.
Oh, that'd be good.
That would be good. Let us know on normal channels.
Yeah.
And then you also heard a really great clip of a woman talking about the flats going up. The flat she's talking about is the Doddington Estate in Battersea. That went up in the late 60s. That was actually from a Thames TV documentary from 1971, produced by Jeremy Isaacs, no less, and directed by Carlos Pacini, and it's called Where the Houses Used to Be. So thank you to all those people for their bits and pieces. We'll obviously put links to them on our show notes.
on our show notes that are only available to those people who support us on Patreon, Lloyd.
Now, we've got a bit of a patron update today, haven't we?
Yes, we have. Well, first thing we ought to do is to say hello to Alan Williams and Jeff Quest.
Alan and Jeff, hello.
Because they are our latest community patrons. Because yeah. At the basic rate of £2, you get access to ad-free podcasts and our show notes and photos and maps, etc.
And new podcasts as soon as they're available.
But at a higher tier of the community patron, you get access to our Discord server where you can chat about other books we might do. And also we've started putting our sort of field trip communications
live
up
from
there.
The road.
Yeah, from the road there for people to join in with. We've decided to drop the price to £5 rather than £9.
Yeah.
Because we think that's better value for money.
Also,
when we'd like to get more people to come and join in.
It's more fun when there's more people in there. So.
Yeah, well, not to say it isn't fun now, because I'm really enjoying some of the suggestions of the books that are being made.
We've had some great suggestions.
Yeah, been really interesting. Yeah, yeah. And also, we find that the people in the community are quite knowledgeable, sometimes a bit more knowledgeable than us.
It's distressing.
Yes, yes. But so we're.
But not entirely surprising.
No, it's a good place to learn.
Yeah.
So for a you know, not a lot of money, I'd say. You can get all the podcasts as soon as they come out, ad free. You get maps, videos, links, and you get to join a community.
Yeah, and have a good old chat about.
So come
books.
And join us. Why not?
Come and join us. Patreon.com. Search for Curiously Specific.
And also our marketing director, Stig.
Stig, yeah.
And he calls himself director now.
Well, I noticed.
Like we're a company
himself.
Or something. He would like you to also share your love of our podcast on your social media platform.
Yeah, I've had a few nice emails of last week about our Dracula podcasts, and which is lovely to have. But I would say anyone who enjoyed it, please tell everyone.
Tell everyone on Twitter. We're a Curiously Spec, @CuriouslySpec.
Yep.
We're on Instagram as Curiously Specific Book Club. There's some pictures and videos up there.
And we're on Facebook as Curiously Specific Book Club.
Yes, the Facebook page, so you can sign up there.
So yeah, so join us on social media, have a chat, check out our Patreon page. We'd love to you know, be able to speak to you directly on our Discord server. And otherwise, we'll see you next for our next podcast in a week's time.
Yes, no more horror, please.
Is there no more horror? No, there's no more horror coming up. I think we're going to the north.
Oh, so it is horror.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.